This is the Techno Buffet Podcast, episode number 622, recorded Thursday, March 9th, 2023, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Yeah, that was the up-tempo version.
Oh.
Well, you know, you have to mix it up every so often. So, welcome to another episode of the Techno Buffet Podcast, which, is it next week that you're not available to do a...
That is a fact, yes.
So it's next week, not the week after?
Correct.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. So next week there will be no recording because Jerry is not here.
That's correct.
It happens. Anyway.
It does.
So I have once again relocated.
Really?
For the last time.
Well, not, and where are you going?
Well, not ever, as in for the last time in a while. I came to Florida to bring my parents home.
And how are you? And how are they?
Well, you know how on a standard airplane there are 3 seats on one side and 3 seats on the other side?
Yes.
They don't want somebody sitting in that 3rd seat, so I'm going to sit in it. So I'm here to occupy space.
Okay.
Well, also... there are other reasons, but I'm going to help them seal up here. They're coming back to New York because I have to go to New Jersey next weekend, which I won't say anything negative about because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Okay.
Well, we've discussed that a lot of my issues with New Jersey involve that it is a pain in the neck to go there, which has nothing to do with the state itself. But anyway, so... I'm here. I get to relax for a few days because all of the massive problems that I'm still trying to clean up at home can't be cleaned up remotely.
That's often true.
Yeah. So I have to make appearances at my place of business. I made those appearances on Monday and Tuesday, got on a plane Tuesday night, flew here, and as long as I'm back at my desk physically in the office next week, then it doesn't matter where I am in between. So maybe that'll work for the future. Who knows? Anyway... also, it's warmer here than it is in New York.
Is it?
It's 42 in New York. It's substantially warmer in Florida. There are other things I don't like about Florida, but a little warmth is nice every so often. So, I have some cleanup things to do here to get their home assistant instance up to date before I leave. Because when no one's here, it does monitor people entering in it and exiting.
Yep.
It's not as specific as the one that runs out of my apartment because the building here has exterminators who come in once a month. And if every time the exterminator showed up, they had loud blaring alarms, they probably wouldn't spray. Or file some sort of complaint. So, none of that. Anyway, so... how has your week been?
Are you familiar with Everything Smart Home?
No.
The YouTube channel guy?
Not off the top of my head, but there are many YouTube channel type people.
So, this particular individual created a motion sensor it's the Everything Presence 1 home sensor. Our present sensor. It's basically a PIR, millimeter wave, light sensor, temperature sensor, humidity sensor, all in one, and USB powered.
I do like a nice millimeter wave.
So they're not cheap. They're like $75. Okay. But so I have one. I have 10, but I have one that, and it's like 3D print your own case and mount it where you want. And I have just been having a heck of a time dealing with it.
For $75, you have to print your own case?
Yep.
Okay. Just sort of asking. For $75, I expect a box. Oh, well. Maybe I'm cheap.
Well, it's not like it's a, he's a big company. He's a dude.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying. Anyway, so what are the problems you've been having with it? I thought that the combination of millimeter wave and PIR made it pretty reliable from what I've read.
Sure, but my trouble comes with ESP Home.
Yeah.
So I like to have all of my configs in ESP Home, the, you know, so I can update everything at once. Yeah. And the, I can edit them to, or edit the configs to, I like editing the configs. I think editing the configs is cool.
Yeah. So what's the problem?
Well, I just, I can't get it to stay connected to the Wi-Fi long enough to accept an update. I have to update it over USB.
That's strange.
It is very strange.
Have you talked to the gentleman who sold it to you? Maybe he's had other customers with similar
experiences. No, I just started tonight. Okay. And the other thing is, it's supposed to, or I've read that it can also act as an active Bluetooth proxy.
And ESP Home in general can do that, not specifically just that device.
Right, but it's got to have a Bluetooth thing, right? Like your the ESP 8266s, they can't, right?
Yeah, the ESP32s have Bluetooth, whereas 8266 doesn't.
Right. So it had, my understanding is that it has Bluetooth, so it can act as an active proxy. And that's a very simple thing to turn on in ESP Home. All you really have to do is put in the words Bluetooth underscore proxy colon, and on the next line, tab in and active colon true. And there you go. You know, Bob's your uncle.
I never understood that expression. But that's a tangent.
Okay.
You can explain it to me another time.
But it's okay. So here's the weird thing. I have lots of ESP32s in my bedroom because I've got like six, one for each foot. And then I've got the Bluetooth, and those are ESP, or those are the small ones, the D1 minis.
Yeah.
And I also have an ESP32 that is acting as a Bluetooth extender.
Which it's good for.
Right. But sometimes that it just kind of loses the plot. So where it's no longer available in Home Assistant, and I have to actually unplug it and plug it back in. I don't know why. But when I do that, then my blinds are available again. Okay, so I'm thinking maybe I just have too much Wi-Fi in this room. So, I don't know. Every ESP32 that I have in my bedroom takes several tries to update. And I have a lot of them throughout the house. And they all update like first try, you know, when you hit the update all button. Except for the ones in my bedroom. And some of those take, you know, 3 or 4 tries or more.
How far is
that? Or sometimes they don't at all. I have to come back in a little bit and try again.
How far is it from the nearest access point?
Right out the door, and the door is open.
Have you tried separating them physically? You said they were pretty close together.
Well, I have no control over where the feet of the bed are.
I meant temporarily.
No.
Okay, I'm trying to think of ideas. I don't know if any of them would work.
So I don't know. I'm just frustrated right now. And like, I brought it in to I brought it into my office.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. It doesn't have the web server enabled, so I can't like get on it to see what it's doing. I'm just frustrated. That's all.
Okay. I'm sorry. If you can't think of anything and your experiments don't work, I would suggest maybe find an ESP home group that might throw out some ideas.
Okay. Now, in positive news, I did figure out how to get the HX711 hooked up with an ESP32, and I now have them all one of the D1 minis, and will handle 2 feet. So I just need to calibrate them and put them under the bed, which was nice. I don't know. Oh, the problem was the HX711 that I was using has a VCC and a VDD. And apparently, one, it doesn't work with 5 volts, even though it says it does. And also, I have to bridge the VCC and the VDD. And then it works. Go figure.
So we have a few things to talk about this week. The Sonoff iHost.
I just saw, I was going to watch a video on this. What is this thing?
Okay.
They say it's a tiny computer.
I haven't actually seen any videos. I caught this a few days ago, and now it's up for sale for limited time, 40% off as an early bird sale. So what it is it's a local hub. But effectively speaking, if you look at the specs, it's pretty much a computer. So the specs include, and I'm just pulling the page so I don't miss anything here. It's powered by a Type-C power supply. It has an Ethernet, but it's only, it's not gigabit. It has a USB 2.0 port. It has an external micro SD card slot. And according to, here we are, I forgot. Built-in microphone and speaker. Controllable LED. It is running apparently there's a quad-core processor in this, and you have a choice of a 4 or a 2 gig model.
Right.
And the idea is that this is going to be your home hub. So let's see if they say anything else in the description, which hadn't launched when I originally talked about this. So it has a Zigbee radio, Wi-Fi, 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi and Bluetooth LE module, a local control console. So essentially they've built a hub. Also, it supports Matter. It supports a variety of Zigbee devices built in, Onvith, RTSP, etc. And I will bet you somebody will figure out how to flash this thing. And they even move down. It supports accessing your Tasmota devices, customizing your voice prompt broadcasts in multiple languages, weather assistant. Apparently, you could add in a LoRaWAN sensor device. They're anticipating more add-ons, and there's an open API interface.
Ah.
And they even have a feature roadmap. So they're starting out with Zigbee compatibility add-ons in quarter one, TTS ability. So some of the features are not fully baked that they're planning. So they're not going to have the Tasmota add-on until quarter two with the weather forecast add-on and the NS Panel Pro. So NS Panel Pro is their like wall-mounted panel that you can integrate with. They want to add in Uink remote. So there's a remote thing, Edge. By 2024, they're hoping for Edge AI, machine vision, and music rhythm. Also, pre-order is now, and they won't ship it until sometime in April. So if you don't want to do something all yourself, you can use this thing. It's very promising. Cool. Well, one, it's promising, and two, I anticipate somebody will flash it.
Sure.
Because why not? I'm fine with what I have. I just thought this was sort of an interesting thing. That Sonoff has realized that people want a local device because if things go down, it should still be there. Moving along, if you do not pay for YouTube and you like to watch it on a desktop, the overlay ads will be disappearing in April.
Really?
I hate the overlay ads.
I didn't know that they were a thing.
That's because both of us pay for YouTube Premium. But, no, I knew they were a thing because I occasionally access YouTube at work when my employer puts up a video on their YouTube page. Because I consider it work-related, and I'm not logging into my personal premium account on my work computer. So it gets there. Which is really annoying, where essentially you have what looks like an old-school Google text ad popping up over your video.
Right.
Not popping up like as a bar at the bottom, but actually literally over part of your video. Anyway, so apparently they've agreed that... It is disruptive for users. So.
Huh. Well, that's nice of them.
Well, again, the alternative is pre-roll or mid-roll or. Is there another roll? There's no such thing as
post-roll.
Mid-roll. What?
Mid-roll, post-roll, pre-roll.
I don't think anybody does post-roll.
You know, you'd be surprised. Podcasts do a lot of post-roll.
No, but what I'm saying is in YouTube, because people just close the window. But I could say pre-roll and mid-roll is you have something to continue with. Why would anybody continue watching if you've already seen everything you want? Other than laziness, because you don't want to change to stop. But yeah.
Because I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm not an ad expert.
I'm willing to bet that it's not that they actually listen to it. It's that, or at least in podcast, by the time you get to the end of it, you've already downloaded the whole thing. So the post-roll ad gets credit.
Well, I was sort of getting annoyed for audio podcast. I was getting annoyed with the pre, mid, and post-roll because I think we discussed this when we tried to do ads for this podcast, which is I get annoyed when the ad seems to, not necessarily fit the podcast.
Yep.
So I was listening to one podcast where the ads were all for Plan B.
That seems relevant to you.
It does?
No.
Well, I'm not even saying relevant to me. I'm saying I didn't feel like it connected with the topic of the podcast, as in I'm wondering what the demographic is. But anyway, so I've had to listen to especially if I want to continue listening to this podcast, I've had to listen to a lot of Plan B ads. But anyway, over the years I've listened to a lot of Audible ads, which at least I sort of thought I might use at some point, although I've never had an Audible subscription. But anyway, so either way, I just don't like some types of ads, and sometimes tune them out. Our friends over at Android Central, let's call them our friends. We don't know them. At least I don't think you know them, do you, Jerry?
I do not.
Okay, they had an editorial about a change that is happening at the end of the month, and I sort of thought I would pick that over sort of the non-editorializing reporting. Headline is Ring is ruining its products with this huge policy change. So on March 29th, all Ring customers will have to have a subscription in order to use home and away mode in the Ring app. Also, new Ring alarm customers will have to have a subscription in order to set and disable their alarm remotely, see more than 24 hours of event history, or even receive notifications from their Ring alarm base station. That seems to be a feature that I don't think should be locked behind a paywall.
Right.
So yep. No, I understand if when a company says we have to have the infrastructure to store your video, if you want your video stored for any length of time, you have to pay us to store it because that costs money. Seeing more than 24 hours of what happened, like an event history log, and being able to change the mode on your device, especially considering that those are features that they already had, taking a feature like that away and putting it behind a paywall seems to be, we'll just say, ridiculous.
Well, if the items behind the paywall are not enticing enough, then they will put enough items behind the paywall until they get the one they're looking for.
But you understand what I'm sort of saying. It's
I'm
talking about those features specifically. It's they didn't add new features. They didn't improve those features. They essentially took away something they were giving people and said, oh, now you can't even use the device without paying us. So it's don't advertise the device as something you can buy in a store and not need a subscription, because now they're making it so you can't really do very much with it without a subscription. Anyway, but would it surprise you to know that I have some Ring devices, and I actually, despite the fact I don't use anything, I don't use their security things, that I actually use the home and away mode in the Ring app?
No.
I use it for a bizarrely weird reason. Well, it's not bizarrely weird, I suppose, but how I use it may be considered bizarre. And
I'm listening.
Okay. So, as you may have noticed, I happen to be Jewish. It's come up a few times. So, my brother and his family are somewhat more sensitive about certain things in regards to observance of religion. And they do not want a camera that would be set off constantly on Saturday.
Sure.
So when I first set up the Ring, which what would happen was I would have to go through and manually disable the motion tracking on every single device and then manually turn it on afterwards.
Right.
I'm using the home and away mode to do that. So I'm not actually using it when I am home or away. I am using that mode, that the home mode is when it disables all the motion tracking for Saturday. And the away mode is when it's all on.
Okay.
So essentially, instead of me having to go into every single device and reprogram every single device every time, I can just do it by selecting one toggle. And if I have to go through every single device, I'm going to go buy some Eufy's security issues or not.
I like them. I'm sorry.
Like what?
The Eufy.
I do use all of the internal cameras are Eufy. The ones that get powered off when I'm actually there.
Right.
But since Eufy was not an option when I started, the older stuff is Ring. So the doorbell camera is a Ring, for example. And I could always replace that with a Eufy, I suppose, at some point. Probably save some money, to be honest. Anyway, that aside, it's starting to get a bit consumer unfriendly.
Is it?
Ring? Well, Ring had enough controversy for some of the stuff that they've done, and now they're saying, oh, well, we're just going to take away features that were included. But anyway, well, actually, to be fair, I actually am paying them, but I'm still offended. So let's change the subject to something happy. Google I.O. 2023 has been announced.
Yay!
It's going to be on May 10th. You're invited, Jerry.
Yay!
To join them online.
Yeah, what?
They're inviting you to join them online.
Okay.
I'll probably watch some of
the. I don't even think they know who I am.
I didn't say you personally. They're inviting everybody to join them on. As in, you can go online and watch the live stream keynotes from the Shoreline Amphitheater and dive into 100 plus on-demand technical sessions. So I can't say that I'm going to watch 100 plus on-demand technical sessions, but I probably will watch the keynotes. Yeah, it always tells us about all the things that Google shows us that they're coming soon that don't come.
Yep, yep.
Gives you something to look forward to. So Ars Technica did a great story on why the floppy disk just won't die. Now, if I knew...
Because it's not alive.
Well, if I knew why... If I knew the floppy disks were still in such demand, I wouldn't have thrown out that box I found when I was cleaning. What impressed me was the that somebody... There's a company that makes floppy to USB emulators.
That's funny.
No, that cost $275 each and replaced the floppy drive with a simple USB port.
Wow. But I bet there's not a big market for that.
But it's a lucrative market, clearly.
Well, you know, if you only sell one a year, you know, that's probably a market that's easily saturated.
Well, I just noticed something very not good.
What's that?
Well, I clicked on one of the links in this Ars Technica story to the company. It says a Texas-based company that sells emulators because I was curious while we were talking to see what this emulator was like. And it took me to a site that is not PLR Electronics. It seems to be a site that I would not want to visit. Anyway, hopefully I didn't get malware just by clicking it. Anyway, moving along with that, I think I still have a USB floppy drive, which is a little different than a floppy to USB emulator. But do you have any fond memories of the floppy?
I do. 5 1/4 from my Commodore 128 days.
Oh, you were fancy. I only had a 64. You had a whole 128.
Yep. I did. Yep. Although it spent most of its time in compatibility mode.
But I had a Commodore 64, and I remember my father in the early 80s when I was very young. What he would do, he would get Computes Gazette magazine, and he had like this box full of 5 1/4 inch floppies, like with typewritten labels, you know, like Computes Gazette, October 1984, with all the programs.
Yep.
And then there were those books where you could, like, you know, there was like a computer program inside this little young adult novel, and you would type in the little program as part of your reading the book. Ah, the good old days. Hmm. If you are using Chromebook, apparently they are working on the ability to auto-run progressive web apps at login.
Oh, no.
Well, this is sort of interesting. The other one is you might be able to auto-run Android apps, but I have never actually thought, when is the scenario when I have a progressive web app that I want to auto-run? Is that like I want to auto-run like an email client that's a PWA?
I don't know.
Well, I'm already running at work. The installed copy of Outlook on my work computer stopped working and lost me a day's worth of email, so I've been using their progressive web app. So, you know, as I think I told you last time, I used Gmail at home, so it's not like I'm unused to using progressive web apps, so maybe everything will be a web app in the future.
Maybe.
Or at least more things. But increasingly, things are web apps. Local installs of certain types of software, you know, things like email clients and such are reduced. Even, you know, you have apps that people can install that are actually just wrappers around websites anyway. Anyway, thing along. Here's one. Forget eSIMs. iSIMs could be the next big thing. Didn't we just get eSIMs?
Yeah, but what's an iSIM?
It's an integrated SIM. So it integrates the SIM card into the phone's main processor.
Which is different from an eSIM?
Which is essentially an electronic. It's a digital version of a SIM card. So in one case, you have an eSIM where it's a digital version of the card that is stored in a protective enclave on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, if I understand this correctly, the iSIM is integrated into the phone's main processor instead of it being a separate thing. So it eliminates the need for a separate component for the essentially for the to run the eSIM programming. Ever feel like we're moving backward?
I think we're moving. Yeah, I don't. You know, we had the same conversations about batteries, right?
Yeah.
Where we want.
I don't want to
want to be able to.
Well, I really don't want to remove my SIM.
When one dies.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore on hardly any phone.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to matter anymore because now the batteries last long enough.
Yeah, the thing that I'm trying to figure out with the iSIM is, I sort of understand this, but can I still as flexibly move around my credentials, is the question with the iSIM. I assume so, because I assume it's the same as the eSIM, that it's digital, and they're just changing where the digital part of it is stored. But if it's that flexible, then I don't necessarily care if it's integrated into the chip or if it's a separate chip. But we'll see. So we're back to LastPass. Remember those guys?
I do.
I'm not sure if you heard about this, that they put out a very detailed forensic analysis, which I'll give them credit for, of what happened.
Right.
Apparently, if I understand correctly, they targeted a DevOps engineer's home computer and exploited the fact that he hadn't updated his copy of Plex Media Server in 3 years.
Wow.
And use that to implant a keylogger, and then capture the employee's master password, and then gain access to his LastPass corporate vault. And that got them access to the LastPass S3 production backups, other storage and critical database backups. So essentially, this was a targeted attack at a single human being. And if you read their overall analysis, and I just linked to the Ars Technica sort of summary of it, it appears that they've realized a bunch of serious mistakes they made, including the fact that things like this were accessible in the event that the engineer's home computer was accessed.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a bunch of different things that are there. Now, there was this long-standing discussion about how during the pandemic a lot of people had to work from home, and they were bringing their security credentials home where previously they might keep them in the office.
Right.
But there's also sort of the second case is, if you're working in a highly secure thing, maybe you should not be engaging in personal things on the same computer that you're using for work. Maybe that's the solution for security reasons. I know it's a pain in the neck to have multiple computers in your house.
It is.
But, you know, air gapping is air gapping. It's not network gapping. At least, again, you're not running Plex or any of those other things on the computers and using that to exploit things. Or there are other options. You know, the sort of more obvious is that your production credentials shouldn't be accessible remotely unless you need them. That only your test credentials should be. And maybe you need more security around your actual production stuff. But again, don't know. I've been lucky. Nobody wants to target me. At least not that I know of. Maybe me maybe me as part of an overall group, but I don't think anybody is looking to target me to get access to the secrets only I have.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah. Obscurity helps sometimes.
Especially since we're nobody really is, like, safe.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I may be a target for people who want to manipulate someone, but I am not a target for someone who wants to take advantage of me specifically. So, I am like the next version of Android.
Nobody knows about it?
No. The code name for Android 15 is Vanilla Ice Cream.
I love it. I do.
You love vanilla ice cream, or you love that it's called vanilla ice cream?
Both.
Okay. I'm not against vanilla ice cream. I can't say that it's my favorite, but good. Although I haven't had much ice cream lately. I've been in the Greek yogurt category recently.
Ah.
It makes me feel like I'm being healthy. So if you use Google TV, which I have been using increasingly, it integrates with 50 streaming services and apps, and I thought I would link to this list of all the interesting things, some of which I don't actually even know. So some of these streaming services I've heard of, and some of them I haven't.
Wow.
Yeah. Have you heard of all of these?
No, but all of the ones that I'm aware of are on here, which is cool.
Yeah, so they have, you know, the significant ones and some of the more obscure ones. They have freebies, so you can watch future episodes of Leverage.
Yay!
Yeah, they put down MGM Plus as new, but technically MGM Plus is a rebrand.
Right.
But again, a lot of interesting things here. And I'm, but while I was waiting for you, since you were running a few minutes behind, because you were elsewhere, I was using my Google TV to watch the latest episode of Star Trek Picard.
How was that?
I don't know. I wasn't done. You showed up.
Oh.
I'll have to find out later. No one's died yet. Let me rephrase that. No one's died yet since I started watching the episode. I didn't get that far before you came. So I'm only a few minutes in. Somebody could die later. I don't know. So there's your spoiler. Nobody died in the first 5 minutes.
Hmm.
That's not really a spoiler.
Thank you.
People have died since the first episode, but not in the first 5 minutes of this episode. Anyway, moving along. If you use Google Fi, they have dropped U.S. Cellular as an official network, which I had never, ever noticed.
I think that's popular in some places.
Yeah, clearly I have never been in those places. They're not places that I happen to be, therefore I have never seen my phone switch to U.S. Cellular. And I'm still debating what I'm going to do when I finish paying off the Pixel 6, if I'm going to hang around with Google Fi. One of the nice advantages of Google Fi was it was really easy to go abroad. But I'm not sure if that necessarily works if you don't go abroad. And I haven't. At the time that I made that consideration, I was traveling a couple times a year. But I haven't left the country in, what now, 3 years? So maybe I should save myself some money and get, or pay the same amount of money and get some more data.
Maybe.
Well, I thought about switching to like Mint or Visible and then maybe just at the airport buy a SIM card, except for the fact that now we have these eSIM things, and then you get with, that's a little more complicated. Are you familiar with Visible?
I am not.
Visible is sort of the, like, it's MVN, it's Verizon, but it's MVNO like Verizon.
Okay.
Their visible, their standard visible plan allows you to call from the U.S. to a bunch of countries, which I wouldn't do. But it says that if you go with their plus plan, then outside of the U.S. you can get half a gigabyte a day. And I could sort of live with that in most countries if it was just for a temporary period. And if I was there for longer than a day, there's always buy a local SIM. Anyway, there's also Mint Mobile, you know, same sort of thing. I could deal with it. They get a decent reputation. But if anybody has any recommendations for me, the idea being something that's inexpensive. I don't need a lot of data, but I wouldn't mind getting more for what I for the same price. And what would I do if I left the country? Other than I'm just remembering, and things have changed a lot. What happened in Italy in 2011? Which was, I went to the first shop, I bought a prepaid card, and the guy misconfigured it, and then I ended up having to go back to another store and deal with another person about it. And then 2015 Israel was fine. I got myself a prepaid SIM before I left the U.S. There are these companies that will sell you a prepaid SIM for almost any country. Well, there's a markup on it, but at least it's sitting in your suitcase, and you don't have to go find a place. So I don't know what the current state of that is, because from 2017 on, I was on Fi, so I didn't have to do anything. So I haven't done much research. And one final story, Gmail and Google Calendar are now generally available with client-side encryption. Woohoo.
I think that's kind of cool.
I know. I'm just saying, I can't say I think it's good. I just can't say I'm really excited. I'm happy. It's not sort of a jump for joy thing. It's a, that's good. I feel better now.
I kind of wish that the whole PGP thing had taken a better hold, you know?
It was, doing PGP was the problem. Nobody succeeded in making PGP, less friction filled.
That's not true. The military did.
I'm talking about...
We had...
No, but I'm talking about for the average user. People in the military are not the average users.
Well, no, they're... But they were using Outlook plugins to do the signing and stuff, and the keys were stored on smart cards. So you basically had your smart card in, and that was used to sign and verify your emails.
Oh, I know. I have a relative who works for the DOD, and he, whenever he comes, came to visit during that period. I haven't seen him much lately, but he used to have a laptop with a smart card interface for that. But but anyway, as I said, it doesn't mean that there's necessarily a problem with PGP itself. It just the friction for most people in getting everything set up was more than they were willing to do. And I consider that a something that somebody could have championed. Anyway, so a lot to think about there, and we will not be here next week.
We will not.
Because, no Jerry, sure next week. Because Jerry is off doing something somewhere.
I will be doing something.
Well, everybody's doing something.
Yes, but I will be off doing something.
Yes. I do not... if there are any problems with scheduling for the subsequent week, I assume you will be reachable if I have to say that we will not be recording it on the 23rd or if we need an alternate time?
Yes.
Okay. You're not completely incommunicado. Good. I can't predict things that far ahead. You know how it is. You think what you think you know what your week is going to be like, and then all of a sudden you, a bunch of things happen, and suddenly you're doing something completely different than what you thought you were going to do.
Yes.
Thus is life. So, do you have any final thoughts to convey to people before they don't hear you for an entire fortnight?
Nope.
That's good. And by the time you Hear me again. I will have visited the state of New Jersey. So for Murph's benefit, I'm going to try to give an honest review because I have never spent this much time in Jersey City. I've been to New Jersey, but I have not spent very much time in Jersey City. I'm going to be spending the entire weekend there.
Is that good or bad?
Shouldn't I reserve judgment?
I don't know. Are you a reserving judgment kind of guy?
Well, you know, it is the second largest city in New Jersey.
Okay.
I'm there for a wedding. It's not like I'm there to sightsee. Hopefully they feed me.
Ooh.
That's usually a safe bet at a wedding, right?
That's interesting.
What? I haven't been to a wedding in a while.
No, I'm watching the logs on this thing, and it's aborting and crashing.
Is it possible that you've put too many modules into it, and that's what's causing the problem over the air?
Well, one of the problems was it kept saying that was connecting to the Wi-Fi and then was disconnecting because the auth expired, which was odd.
Things happen. But remember.
But then part of the solution of that was seems to be let the DHCP do its thing, meaning remove the manual IP address.
Yeah, which seems odd.
It did that.
A problem.
Right. But I don't know. It's interesting. So, but I'm making progress, I think.
I look forward to hearing about it next time, and I think it's the perfect cliffhanger.
2 weeks till you'd find out.
Yes. Will Jerry figure out his problem? Stay tuned for episode 623 of the Techno Buffet podcast to find out.
Woohoo!
Is that a good note on which to end, you think?
I think we should end.
Okay. Good night, Jer.
Good night.